This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Wednesday, it's the 24th of April, 2024. Coming up today, another Apple event on the way. Meta AI comes to Canada and a headset for people with macular degeneration.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you doing today?
I am great, thank you, Stephen Scott. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine. You know, between our technical issues and our inability to remember anything.
Oh, no. It was terrible. So, before recording, just before, you put out the question, what was the principal's name in The Simpsons?
Yes.
And that was it. That was everything had to stop until I remembered it. I was determined not to Google it. So that was about 20 minutes wasted. But yeah, my memory is shocking.
Yeah, but what was worse was I was telling you a story and I said, oh, it reminds me of the... And what's the name of the headmaster in The Simpsons? And then we spent so long trying to work out what it was, I forgot the reason for asking the question.
Yeah, it was quite terrifying, actually, but yes.
The virtual equivalent of walking into a room and saying, why am I here?
Why am I here?
That is happening now. Oh, dear.
Dear.
Oh, you know, I think it's because we've got so much to talk about on the show today. Let's just blame that.
Good segue. I like it.
And lots to talk about and lots to remember to tell you. Those of you who are on Mastodon and follow us at Double Tap on there, you might find, that's what we should call it, because we're Double Tap on Air. That's a great idea. We should call the social media Double Tap on There. That's good. I like that.
That is actually very good.
Someone should write that down and remember it, but of course.
Yes.
Not us. But yeah, I put up on Mastodon yesterday to say to people, look, just a reminder, we're going to be off on holiday, not together. We're going to be separate for a month. Are you going to be okay with this?
Yes. I think I'll manage, actually. Yes.
Is this the best moment of your life about to come up? Are you excited?
I know for a fact you'll be calling me and WhatsApping me the entire time anyway, so it's fine.
Listen, I'm telling you. I'm going on proper holiday. I'm going on complete shutdown. I'm going to be off the grid.
Yeah. Yeah. You always say that.
No, do you know how I know? I know this. I know this for two reasons. One, because I want to be off the grid for a month. But also, because I know whenever I leave my house, I mentioned this to you before, whenever I leave my house, my smartphone will not connect in any way to the outside world. So my phone goes off grid as well. So there's no chance when I'm on holiday I'll be able to contact you because my phone will not work. I'll be relying on the mountain people.
What? What are you talking about now? I thought he was on a cruise ship.
Well, it depends. Well, like I'm saying, I'm depending on the mountain people because if the cruise doesn't go too well, I guess that's where I'll be.
I know for a fact.
I'll be relying on emergency SOS the whole way.
2 days in, you will be joining that ship's Wi-Fi. You will be getting out your credit card and I will be WhatsApped. I know for a fact.
Do you know why? Can I tell you something? Do you know why I end up getting onto the Wi-Fi? Because my wife cannot stay off Facebook long enough. She wants to go on Facebook and see what's going on. She wants to keep up to date with the neighbours and what's going on at home.
You've got to go cold turkey. I'm going to try. I had to do that and I lasted about 2 days. I did put it on my secondary phone, but still off my main phone. So that's, you know, little tiny steps.
No, I am desperately trying to because I think if I'm honest with you, this is the first time in a long time I feel I could really do with a bit of break away from stuff.
You say that every time and you don't stop working.
That's exactly right. But do you know why? Because if I'm off, we take the day off or, you know, Mr. F says, hey, listen, have the Monday off because it's a National Moose Day in Canada.
Yes.
Which I know everybody celebrates. Then, you know,
that's a risky move.
What, there isn't a National Moose Day? If there's not a National Moose Day, that is an absolute disgrace.
There's more to Canada than mooses or moosai. What's the plural for moose?
Mooses?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Feedback at doubletapon.air.com.
This is why we end up getting lost and off track. So what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So we are going to be away for that month, and I am going to try and stay off the grid. And like I say, I just want to make sure that I get a chance to get a breakaway. Because here's the problem. I feel in the last year, and I'm sure you feel this as well, we started going daily. And I remember when we started going daily, I thought to myself, There were days where I was a bit concerned that we would struggle to fill with content. But what's happened in the last year is, and AI has been a huge part of this, there's been such an explosion in tech news on top of everything else that already is happening. You know, we'd go through a month and we'd expect maybe an Apple event and we'd be like, oh, an Apple event. And yes, there is another one coming up. But, you know, that is wrapped up within all these other stories. What I'm saying is I need a break from it. And I think we all need a bit of a break from it. And just going away for a little bit, coming back, being completely detached from that world for a while sounds good. My only fear, is what we come back to, because we will have about 1,000 stories to cover when we get back. So I'll probably just get stressed very quickly when I get back.
Yes. Well, as long as the listeners stay with us, obviously, we want your emails to keep coming in, especially.
Well, I want to mention this. Yeah, I want to mention this because, look, obviously, we'll be away. We will still be putting out some programs and some content on the podcast as well. So you'll be able to hear us. You'll not be completely dismissed from us for a month. However, we won't be able to read your emails, obviously. We're not going to be reading any emails. We're not going to be dealing with any of that. So if you want to hold off sending anything in, that is fine. But if you are sending in an email, you know, just be aware, we're not going to get to it till the end of May. Laura will be back with us at that point and we'll get everything put together and then we'll be able to play in your emails and voicemails. And of course, we always welcome them. But what I'm wanting you to know is that if you're sending them in, don't expect to hear them on air because you won't. So
yes,
just, you know, we'll put an auto reply on the email as well so people know this if they've missed the show and haven't heard us talk about this. But I just think it's important for people to understand that. So, yeah, we'll be taking a bit of a break. I am looking forward to it. I love doing this show every single day, but I kind of feel I need a break. And I think we all do from this relentless conversation about AI and events and so on. But it is going to be an interesting turn of the year because when we come back, we'll be getting ready for WWDC from Apple. And this is really the big year for Apple to get its act together when it comes to AI. So, I think they will. I hope they will.
I think they will.
We never really know.
Do you know what?
Day.
I'm excited. It feels like we're going to hit a new level. Something truly new. You know, we always get that. Oh, it's not innovating anymore. And I feel like this time we're going to see something new, a new way to use your smartphone. And I'm excited by this one.
Listen, just to mention as well, I've said this the other day, but the website is full of content that you can go check out. We're updating it every day, pretty much, with conversations we've had here. Also, extra content as well. Lots of really cool stuff coming up on the YouTube channel. So if you get a chance to subscribe to that, that channel will also be taking a break over May, so you won't be seeing as many new episodes, but it might give you a chance to go back and catch up. So if you haven't checked it out, and I know some of you are now subscribing to it, or at least checking out the content, it does help us. I know lots of you always ask us, how can we support your show? How can we support this program? Well, you can go and subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can go and subscribe to the podcast because that all helps us. That helps us prove that there's a demand and a desire for this program.
Because funnily enough, some people subscribes, say, who's listening and watching YouTube?
Yeah, I get that a lot.
That really would help us out. Thank you.
But yeah, go check it out. We've just posted a new episode yesterday about accessible gaming. That was a lot of fun. We chatted about the whole world of accessible games. We had Sightless Combat, Steve Saylor, Ross Miner with us talking about that. So do check that out. We've also got an episode coming up this week all about Lenovo and their commitment to accessibility and a really interesting story that came up from that chat that I had with Graham Thomas, the senior technologist for Lenovo in the UK and Ireland. And he told me a really interesting thing about the reason why they made a major change to the Lenovo keyboard for the first time in decades. And it was all down to visually impaired people. Have a listen to this. This is a short clip from the video. Talk about what you've done here to make the keyboard more accessible.
Yeah, so we've always had the home keys on the F and the J key and feedback. And you've got to remember as well, but like any employer of a reasonable size, we've got users who've got accessibility needs as well. So we're not just looking at our customers. we've got a duty of care to our own colleagues. And based on customer feedback and our own colleagues, we realised there was scope. You know, nowadays, the keyboard hasn't changed that much in terms of the number of keys and buttons. But what we're trying to do with that keyboard is has increased. You know, we're not just typing letters, and there's a need to very quickly move to certain areas of the keyboard for functionality. So we've actually put more raised bumps across the keyboard. So the volume buttons on the function row, there's a smaller one for volume down and a bigger bump for volume up. There's one on the insert key, enter. There's also a slight change we've made in the bottom left-hand corner, but having a few more bumps around are enabling users to navigate around there easier. But a big change we've done, and this is actually one that's sort of turning things around after about 30 years. One of the big sort of comments that's been made about our keyboard is we've always had the function key at the bottom left of the keyboard, and the control key was the next one in. Now, whenever customers who've come from competitors or even using desktop keyboards have said to us, look, everyone else has the control in the bottom left, then the function key. You've got it the other way around. Can you not just change this? And you can swap it in software for people who really want that functionality. But the argument's always been, if we do that for customers coming from a different brand, we could alienate all of our existing customers. And you mentioned about, you know, us being the biggest vendor. That's a lot of existing customers. But then the criticism was leveled that what about visually impaired people? And that was all it took. You know, that obvious thing, you know, where we stood by it and said, look, you know, all of our other customers are used to it, but it is an obstacle for anyone who's visually impaired, because even a desktop keyboard is the other way around. So it was the right thing to do. So this year's keyboards, the control is in the bottom left, then the function key, because that's what the world's used to. So, yeah, but just by saying, look, we've got too many customers who are used to it, that argument didn't hold water anymore.
That's incredible. And it kind of shows the power of a very small group of people. Let's be honest, visually impaired people are. You know, I'm part of a very small minority in the world today. But, you know, it does show that our voice holds some weight, even in a big company like yours.
And it's an interesting argument, that, right?
It's fascinating, isn't it? That's just a small clip of that interview that's coming up on Sunday. I think that may be appearing. Saturday or Sunday, it'll appear on the YouTube feed. Do check it out. If you subscribe to the channel, you'll be notified immediately when the new episode appears. Oh. And I think that's when that bell thing is for. I'm starting to learn how this YouTube thing actually works.
I believe that's notifications. Yes. Do you want to be notified every time a new episode comes out?
Yeah.
Yes, there's something in there. Yeah, we're not too au fait with it yet, but we'll get there. But the point is, though, I mean, that's a valid argument, right? Well, hang on, why should we change our layout for another brand's layout? If we got a large market share, people are used to this, but it is an issue. The amount of times I swap over, and if you use your keyboard helper, is that what it's called? Keyboard help of your screen reader. The function key isn't announced. You press the function key, it says nothing, right? Mm-hmm. If you press the control key, it will say control key, alt key, spacebar.
And you're always hitting it by accident.
Yeah, but that's right. And that's how I figure out which one is the function key, because it says nothing and the other ones do. So you can figure it out. I'm not saying it's unworkable. But yeah, it's definitely an issue. But the fact that they said, okay, if it is a problem for visually impaired people, then we will make that change, that is very interesting.
Yeah, so really interesting conversation. Check that out on YouTube soon. And more great conversations next week as well. So yeah, we're putting together some really nice episodes at the moment that you can hopefully enjoy on YouTube. Of course, if you can't access YouTube, we do have the best of YouTube available here on the AMI audio show and on the podcast as well. You can find that airing on Sundays. Now, we know a couple of episodes haven't gone up for whatever reason, so we apologize for that, but we're going to make that right, because during the time I'm away and the time that Sean is away as well, but unfortunately by default,
yes,
you don't have much of a choice in that one. Unless you're welcome to stay on and do the whole show for the month on your own. You could just do that yourself. People would love that.
Yes, I'm sure they would. People would absolutely love it. You'd come back to nothing, an empty house.
Well, look, we are going to be giving you the chance to hear those best of YouTubes in full. So, you know, if you have missed any, don't worry, you can catch them during May. So plenty of opportunities to catch our content here on AMI Audio and on podcast and on YouTube. DoubleTapOnAir.com is the home of everything. We just posted the review as well. Thank you again to Ron in Houston for sending in that amazing review of the all-terrain
game. So good.
If you want to go back and listen to that, it's on the website. Just just get to the reviews heading and you'll be able to check out loads of reviews.
There's listen tons again.
Or for the first time. A lot of people might not hear all these amazing features, so get the chance to go and listen to them. Okay, so let's talk about some of the news of the day, because there's a few things going on. Apple announced a new event May 7th for new iPads. We're not going to be here to cover it, but we can probably tell you what's coming. We just tell you the news now if you want.
iPads.
It's going to be new iPads, yeah. New iPads, new iPad Pencil, possibly even a new keyboard for the redesigned iPad, as they're suggesting the new iPad Air may be. There's even talk of a new larger 12.9-inch iPad Air.
Can I be honest with you? And this is slightly embarrassing. I've lost track of the different iPads.
Yeah.
iPad Pro, iPad Air. Then there's the iPad for almost the entry-level iPad, I call it. Some people may say budget. I couldn't possibly say that. The iPad for sort of education, almost. Mm-hmm. So what's going on there? Are they all still active? Is the Pro still a thing? Is that going to be unveiled at this event?
So they've got... I'm having a look at the range, and it is a little bit confusing. Because you've got the iPad Pro, okay, so you've got that in two sizes. You've got, I think it's 11-inch and 12.9-inch. Then you've got the iPad Air. Then you've got the iPad 10th gen. They're still selling the 9th gen, which is the last one that had the Touch ID button on it, or at least the Touch ID on the front of the device. And the iPad Mini, which hasn't been updated since 2021. So it's about time for one of those to be coming out, I would have thought. But yeah, the talk is around iPad Pro and iPad Air. This could be the year they start to shrink down this range a little bit, which might not be a bad idea. I mean, it's all going to go by sales, isn't it? They're going to go by what is working. And iPad Air is certainly makes more sense to me to be the sort of almost the base level, and then iPad Pro be the Pro level.
The Pro,
That seems all you would need. Perhaps the Mini. I don't know if the iPad Mini is going to fall off the edge. I kind of hope it doesn't, because I thought that was a brilliant design. It was probably my of all the iPads I've ever had hands on, that was my favorite one, because it wasn't heavy. It was actually a nice leisure iPad. It wasn't too big. You could take it with you, because look, here's the problem. I don't know about you, but an iPad for me, I get an iPad, I use it for about 2-3 weeks, and then I put it down, and that's kind of it. I don't really
never
touch
look at it again. And why is that though? Why is that? Well, is it because we're always carrying on? Again, it's like it's the same thing, right? You're replicating your iPhone.
I suppose what I was using it for then was to get zooming, you know, the chance to zoom into to images of something I was buying. It's really
That's
useful
the
for
key.
That.
Yeah.
But
tablets.
The same comment I'm making about, you know, picking up the iPad, using it for 2 weeks and then putting it down again are the same comments I'm seeing from people who are not disabled. Which is interesting. You know, I saw a few people commenting yesterday on this when the announcement came out, and they were like, you know what, I don't know how much I use this iPad. Now, of course, there's always people who will use it for pro purposes. Of course, there's the people who, you know, use it for creative work and drawing and all that, and I get that. But that is a very small number of people.
It is.
So I just wonder, for me, if they turned around and said, there's a brand new iPad Pro, it's available in 11-inch or in 12.9-inch or whatever size, and it runs Mac OS. Now I'm interested.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? You would be.
Surface Pro in Mac format. That's basically how I would see it. Because that's ultimately what that would become. Now, of course, we're not there yet. We're nowhere near ready, for, at least as far as I'm aware. There's been no rumors
or
talk
killing,
about
that. You're that, killing that your laptop. Your MacBook Air.
Why they don't do it. It's not capable. It's got the processing power in there. Yeah,
of course it is.
In the current version's running an M2 processor. So, I mean, it's running it was actually probably running faster than what my MacBook Air was running. And it's got an M2 in there. So, I mean, or at least it's on par. So the capability is there, but there doesn't seem to be a desire to move towards this more, because honestly, I thought we'd have joined up by now, or at least be moving towards joining up. It doesn't feel that we're there.
No, absolutely not. And maybe that's, I'm sure they've tried this in the labs, in the Apple labs. I'm sure they've tried this and looked into this. But maybe that form factor just isn't a great experience for a desktop OS. That's why they haven't done it. I mean, you say about the Surface, and I know lots of people who like the Surface, you don't like it.
No, but look, that's just because I don't like the kickstand. That's a stupid reason not to like it for me, right?
That's a ridiculous reason. Yeah, but again, we're talking about form and efficiency of using the device, right? And it's just a laptop hasn't been beaten yet for portable computing. I don't care what you say. There are certain use cases for a tablet, you know, usually something to do with photography or videography. But other than that, trying to do anything else on it, then you've got to add the keyboard or, you know, a mouse or whatever it may be, a stand, and suddenly you're back to a laptop form factor.
So funny. We always end up back to where we started. We get the thing and you go, wow, look at this. I can have this whole thing in the palm of my hand. But, you know, I'd kind of like to do a Word document. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll buy a keyboard that can connect to this thing wirelessly.
Yeah.
And, oh, actually, do you know what? I need to be able to use the cursor on the screen. Okay, I could use the little, you know, finger pointer or whatever. No, do you know what? Just get a mouse. Okay, there we go. And do you know what would be really cool? Like some kind of big display that I could plug the whole thing into so I could see it really big. Okay, I'll buy a monitor. Suddenly you're just back to a computer plugged into an iPhone. So yeah, I get it. It does feel like we've kind of go back to that. But again, I still think there's an opportunity here. And I can sense, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think that, you know, Apple are going to move towards this at some point. It's going to be called the MacPad or something. You can have that. And that is going to be
I want it.
Maybe not, but I do think there could be something in that. The problem is they've never brought a touch interface design to macOS. As soon as you see that coming in, as soon as you see anything that suggests, I mean, and we all know what that's going to be, it's going to be a MacBook with a touchscreen. That's how it'll begin. They might never go down the route of actually merging the two. They may try and keep the two separate. But I think, if I'm honest, that's what holds the iPad back. I don't think the OS is good enough. I think it feels like something that is trying to be a really good productivity device, like a laptop, but in the style of a leisure device. And that doesn't work, I don't think. I don't think people are buying into that.
I think a big problem is a lot of people would love a tablet, you know, in their living room, like just for general use for everyone in the house. Where's the individual logins for different users?
Yeah,
that would be great. You know, if I could just leave it on the coffee table and then I can log in and blah, 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 do whatever I want to do, then someone else can just pick it up. I just don't have an interest anymore. And I suppose it is purely down to not caring about the screen anymore. I had an iPad when I could watch Netflix or browse the web on it, zoom in or whatever it may be, and I really enjoyed it. But since then, there's no difference to me from using that to using a iPhone mini. So where's the draw? But then, you know, if you're low vision, absolutely. It may be fantastic.
I mean, I can see, I know there are blind people who listen who do use iPads. We've had this conversation before.
We've had people
write in and say, you know, look, I'm totally blind, I use it. And I kind of feel, in a way, I'd like to do this more. I'd like to use it as a device, but I've always come up against challenges, and to the almost the extent where I felt, you know, I've been in the middle of doing something and I've thought, do you know what, I'd be quicker just pulling out the MacBook and doing this. And if that's the case, it's kind of a dead duck for me. You know, it's just not doing it. It's not about the screen, because I think for me what it's about is having the ability to have almost that small form factor, getting back to what I said before about the 11-inch MacBook Air that I've got. You know, if I could have a really small iPad with a really nice keyboard, that'd be a really nice, like, mini version of a MacBook. You know, that could be really nice.
Talking
but
about
it's not.
An Apple netbook now.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Well, not as underpowered as a netbook. In fact, that's the thing. And this is, again, the irritant. It's got the power in there. It's got the capability, and it feels to me as if, you know, they could keep the tablet mode and then just switch it to macOS. You didn't even need to use the touchscreen if you didn't want to, but you could. I mean, I don't imagine it being possible.
No one's pulled this off, though. No one's pulled off, unless anyone can point me in a different direction, of a usable touchscreen desktop operating system. I mean, Microsoft tried it with Windows 8, right? With the start screen, with the big tiles, everything was nice and big, and everyone hated it, absolutely hated it. So then the start menu came back. And look, yes, of course there's Windows machines out there that are touchscreen, but if you talk to anyone, most of the time say, no, I never use a touchscreen. Mm-hmm. It's still the keyboard and mouse, and that's the level where we're at. And no one's been able to design anything where touch is better than those. So I don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Well, we shall see. May 7th is the event. So we shall find out when we are back what actually was announced. But yeah, I mean, I think the only one I'm interested in is seeing the Apple iPad Mini getting a bit of love. I think that would be nice. And it feels like it's time, so we shall see.
That did blow everyone away when
that
was
the one everyone talked
back.
About. Yeah, people did like that. Exactly. People like that style. And you get a little dead little keyboard with it as well. It was really nice. That was more my style. Although I sometimes think, you know that way I'm a big guy, and I think, there's a big guy sitting with a tiny laptop. Does it look right? Do I feel like I'm just sitting with a kid's toy?
Sorry, what do you want? A 32-inch laptop now?
Yes,
just so it's proportional to the size of us.
Make that. Okay, let's
talk
about Meta.
Does this laptop make my bum look big? Okay.
That's a great question, I tell you. I think we all know the answer. Meta AI, it's finally in Canada. Hooray!
Breaking news.
Why did we not start with that? That is actually massive news, because this is a really useful feature.
It is incredible. This has even surprised Meta and also the company Essilor Luxottica, who are behind actually building these Ray-Ban Metas. Apparently, they're selling out faster than they can make them. They are so popular, these glasses.
I want some.
And you know, you can understand why. If you're thinking about buying a new pair of sunglasses, and you can add or get this functionality added in with the price. I mean, I know they're expensive, but then if you buy good, you know, quality sunglasses, they are going to cost serious money. But if you are buying ones that have got this smart technology in it, it is going to be worth it. They've just added a whole new range of styles and designs with different face shapes as well to try and accommodate for as many people as they can. This is going to be coming. Yes, they're going to be rolling this out for as many people. As you can find, I guess, across the US, Canada, Australia, and throughout Europe. However, Meta AI is the big story. Not here, not available yet in the UK. Boo!
I know.
Hopefully soon. But at least in the US and Canada, which is great news. So if you're in Canada, you've got the Ray-Ban glasses, check your app, your Meta app, and see if you, it's Meta View is the name of the app, check it out and see if you've got an update, because you should be getting access to Meta AI. And not only Meta AI, which allows you to do cool things, obviously talk to the device, ask what you're looking at, there's lots of things you can do, and we just haven't had the chance to understand fully what the capabilities are, because we don't have access to it yet.
No.
But one thing you can now do, and they've added this as well, is make video calls with WhatsApp and Messenger and use the camera on the glasses to share your view. Now, you know, and I know we're thinking here. Yes. Really? So you can do video wirelessly with this? What else? What else could we use that for? Where sharing our view would be useful.
Absolutely. And just this alone, though, that is a game changer for me. The amount of times I've got lost out on the field somewhere and I, you know, we got a family WhatsApp group and a group call, help me, I'm lost. Being able to invoke that whilst wearing the glasses, not having to hold the phone out, get the phone out at all, absolutely fantastic. I want these glasses. These are really strange to me, because we've had, you know, the wearables more designed towards us as visually impaired people, and these come out of nowhere and offer some functionality which I think I really want. These are cool.
I was quite dismissive at first. I think the first edition of these seemed, from memory, pretty underpowered. They weren't getting great reviews. And then the second edition came along, and I think it was partly because there was a take-up and interest in the design, and it's kind of gone one step further. You know, they've really taken not only the design forward, but they've taken the smarts more seriously. They're putting more into it. I do say, and I've heard this from many places, that Meta were kind of surprised themselves at the take-up of this. Because, of course, when we watched the event last year, I remember watching Meta Connect, and you and I were talking about this. During the event, they were focusing on, and rightly so, VR and the Quest headset. And there's a story about that in the news as well yesterday, which came out alongside this. But of course, and you know, most people are reporting on that rather than on this story. But and I understand why, right? That's their market. They want to move into that with Meta. That's what they want to do, which is fine. But at the end of the event, or near the end of the event, they talked about upgrading the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. And I remember saying to you at the time, this is the bigger story. I don't think Meta even realized this. This is the bigger story. This is the one that's going to interest people, because this is the kind of thing that feels more realistic in today's world. It's not a headset. I mean, yeah, VR headsets are great and they're fun, but they're also quite isolating, and, you know, that comes with negative stories.
They are.
Actually, you know, glasses, sunglasses, we can all get behind that. And sharing pictures. Well, who doesn't love sharing a picture? I'm just so glad it's not a picture of the person's face, although I imagine probably most people are going to stand staring at mirrors and take pictures of themselves. But who cares, right? That's what people do nowadays. And to be able to do that, and you know, like I say, I've been loving these glasses. I love the new designs as well. They've just brought a new pink one. I haven't told my wife yet. She loves pink. I have a feeling I know what was going to be wanted next. I think that might be one of our purchases when we're in Canada. Hey, hang on. If we're in Canada, can we get access to... I might look into that. I might get a chance to play. But yeah,
basically... Record a review.
Yeah. The thing is, I wonder if you set it up in Canada and then bring it back to the UK, does it turn off the functionality? I bet it does. But anyway, we shall wait to see. But Meta AI in Canada, so if you've got the Meta Ray-Bans, go check it out. And if you want to tell us about it, then email us feedback at doubletaponair.com. Call, as always, you can do that, 1-877-803-4567. We'll take a short break and we'll come back. We've got an interesting story about an AR headset for people who have macular degeneration. Alison Sheridan from the Nozilla podcast is back with more of her finds from CES earlier this year.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Mitchell Freeman from Ocutrex is about to tell us about a pair of AR glasses that are supposed to be able to start helping people with macular degeneration. A topic very interesting to me. It's a loss of sight due to damage in the retina from a very specific cause. But let's talk about what you're working on here.
Yeah, so this is central vision loss. It runs in my family, like in yours. My father had this. So these AR glasses, you put them on, it does a visual field test on the headset. Then it defines what the defect is in each eye. The defect is called a scotoma. And then we create what we call a scotoma marker on the live video feed. So whatever they're looking at, it moves the visual information out to the edges where they still have good retina. And it's really exciting because people haven't been able to read in years. After just a few moments of wearing this headset, they start reading at a regular rate. We have several different modes. We have, because this is what we built this headset for, we have to be able to correct over a wide field of view. We have the widest field of view of any AR glasses out there, 60-degree field of view, 5K resolution. We think it'll have a lot of other uses, but where our heart is helping people with macular degeneration.
So is your brain adapting to this information now, moving from the dead spot out to the outer periphery of your vision?
It really is. It's the brain does an amazing job of interpreting for the eyes. So when you have that blind spot, it's a very frustrating thing. My father told me that. But this basically helps their brain perceive words again. They can often see one or two letters at a time. And I remember my dad trying to collect the letters in his brain and then read it in his head. That's very laborious. But with this technology, people can sight read. You know, you read by grabbing the whole word at a time. So now they can see the whole word. They take off reading at a regular rate. It is so exciting.
We were with the people who had created a headset that simulates macular degeneration. And it was a really, really frustrating thing. It's like, I likened it to when you try to look at a star and you can't see it, but if you look away, you can see it. It's like that. It's like you've got this dead spot in the middle of your vision. If you look away, you can see it in the periphery. But you're saying they could look right at something, and now it's going to collect that information and put it to the sides of their vision?
So what some of the optical therapists do is they try to teach them to look off to the side and focus on
right.
that. What this kind of allows them to do is use both sides of the good retina, because we're stretching all the visual information, like the word is now stretched out, and so they don't have to kind of have that training. They can just start reading. They seem to be able to just read and pick it up.
I got to tell you, this sounds too good to be true.
My dad said, this is very frustrating. We need to do something to help people. So when he was still alive, we filed some patents, had some ideas on how to do this. Actually, one of the first things that kind of pointed this out to us, remember back in the day when there's a lot of curved TVs? We were testing different things out, and we had him look at a curved TV, and he said, you know, I can't see the 50-yard line, but I can see more than I could back here.
Oh, when it was flat. Oh, really?
So that's kind of what headed us down this path to kind of get the visual information where they still have good part of the retina.
All right. Well, so Oculens is what it's called. It's AR, MR, XR. It's got all the R's. It's got AI.
It's not VR, because we still want the patient to be able to see through there if they need to, so it overlays. But they can still, you know, if they lose power, they can still see through them and see the world.
It's a good idea. So when would you expect a product like this to be on the market?
You know, these are our final prototypes that we're doing trials with patients, and we think we'll be able to start shipping second quarter.
Really? Really?
Yes,
do you have to go through any FDA approval or anything?
This is 510K exempt, but we're still doing some of the FDA trials, because the next people that want to use this are surgeons. They saw this for their patient. They go, we need this for surgery so we can comfortably, you know, it's very uncomfortable looking in oculars for hours. It's very lightweight, very comfortable. We've had a lot of comments today that this is so lightweight. The battery, we were running this yesterday for 6 hours. It's got a battery that'll come off. We're very excited about this. These are all 3D printed parts. We're in production on most of this right now with the injection molding. So we're putting all this together really quickly. It has the XR2 chipset in here. It's running multiple cameras. It's doing everything your phone can do, plus a little bit more. We think this will really become the phone for low vision people, where they can. We had a young lady that had Stargardt's, a juvenile version of macular degeneration. She had her PhD. She was teaching, but she'd done everything by just listening to it. She put this on. She had a very large defect in her eye, in both eyes. She put this on, started reading, and then we turned on the video, and she was like, oh, this is so clear. She was, you know, she tries to watch video, but she was so excited to be able to watch a video.
It must have been so transformative. How fantastic. All right, so if people want to learn more, where would they go?
Just look for the Ocutrex, oculens.com.
Ocutrex is spelled OCUTRX.com.
Yep.
Very good. All right, thank you very much, Mitchell.
Thank you guys for coming by. Thanks.
Amazing. Thank you to Allison at NozillaCast, and of course her website podfeet.com. Allison sent us that in, and that was actually recorded at CES earlier this year, back in January. But a great opportunity to learn about a company that, you know, is probably not going to get the spotlight on any of the media channels that might have been passing through CES this year. But, you know, a great opportunity to learn about that. And what amazing stuff. I mean, it always fascinates me how these ideas come out. You know, someone saying, oh, you know, I could see something more easily via a curved TV. And suddenly it's like, there's an idea. And then being able to turn that into something that can help people, you know, use what remaining vision they have. That's just incredible.
It is. And that could have a huge impact, because macular degeneration is so common out there. Across
it's a leading
every
cause, leading cause of sight loss.
Yeah,
leading
and,
cause.
Stargardt's as well. I know a few people who've got that, and they really struggle with it, and it is frustrating. My partner Sarah, actually, for the longest time, she has glaucoma, but for the longest time, she had some vision right at the top of her periphery.
Oh yeah,
and
right.
It's so frustrating, and I can't quite get my head around, to be honest with you, how the brain adapts to that, how moving, shifting something, you know, that you're looking at into a peripheral vision that you can see. But
as he said right there, your brain adapts. And I think this could be absolutely massive. As long as it can deliver on its promises, I think this is sounding very, very cool.
Yeah, just incredible. Thank you to Alison, as always, a huge friend of the show. And she did one of our podcasts. I didn't realize this, but she did a podcast a couple of weeks back, and she talked about us. She was very kind, very nice.
Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah, really, really good.
I'm so behind on my podcasts, I got to say.
So am I. I really am. I'm hoping. Do you know, it's funny, right, because I was telling you this earlier. And you know me and sleep, right? Sleep and I don't really get on that well. And yesterday, I'd gone to bed at 10 o'clock at night, which I always try and stay a little bit later because if I go to bed too early, my wife's up very early in the morning for work, so she's up really early. So I don't want to be in bed too late because then I'm disrupting her sleep. But then at the same time, I can't go to bed that early because I end up just waking up. And so I did. I went to bed at 10 o'clock. I woke up at 11:30. That was me. Oh. I could not get back to sleep.
Wow.
And you know, I didn't get any more sleep until last night. Any more sleep at all, and I actually felt fine, and I thought maybe my body's just telling me I've got enough and that's okay. It's weird, right? But anyway, one thing I did last night was I put on a podcast to try and help me get over to sleep. Sometimes just you need to switch your brain off, right? So I put on a podcast all about the news, so that was great. And because there's nothing happening in the world, it's been very quiet recently. So I put on this podcast, and what happened was I fell asleep and it was great. But then what happens is I wake up because my brain's telling me, or I can hear the voice. I think it might have been actually a notification that came through the AirPods. And because it does that, it makes this weird noise in your AirPods to tell you you've got a notification. That kind of woke me up. And then
go to sleep with your AirPods in?
Well, I just fall asleep. So yeah, they're just in. But anyway, I woke up and I was so irritated. I yanked the AirPod out of my ears and threw it on the desk beside my bed.
Well, that's lost.
Yeah, it's gone. But anyway, no, podcasts. Podcasts are great.
Well done. Breaking news.
Yeah. okay, let's get a voicemail in before we go. This is from Julian, who is our negative Julian, our good friend, negative Julian. Haven't heard from you in a while, Julian.
No.
He's confused.
Oh.
Hello, guys. Negative Julian here. Firstly, let me apologise if the microphone on this headset occasionally picks up some external noise. Some neighbours across the way are having their cavity walls pumped full of some sort of insulating foam. They've been drilling and pumping for hours now, so can't do anything about that. Why am I calling? Well, it's because I've heard you yet again mentioning on-device AI. You've been mentioning that on and off for months now, and am I the only person in the world who doesn't have a clue what you're talking about? Because I don't.
Okay.
I can quite understand that chip manufacturers will be trying to optimize their chips to make best use of AI, optimize performance and all that. They'll all be doing that, as AI is the big thing. And I can quite see that it would be good to use AI to improve the onboard assistance in all our various devices. For instance, you could tell Siri to create shortcuts to all your navigation apps and place them all in a folder in the top right-hand side corner of your home screen. I mean, that would be really clever, wouldn't it? We'd all like that. But is that what the average person on the street understands by AI in the current time and place? I really don't think so. I mean, to take one of your own examples, you told us that your wife used AI to select the breed of dog that you wanted. Now, there's no way that you could possibly do that on device, is there? Somehow, at some stage, your device is going to have to go to the internet or some subset of the internet to sort out all the stuff on breeds of dog. To take another example, if you asked an AI to summarise the current state of research into macular degeneration. It can't do that on device. It's got to go to some sort of online database to get the information. And yes, I can see a company like Apple might say that for your security, we'll only get data from our own servers, but A, that's still not on device. You're still going onto the internet somewhere to get the information. B, it would probably be horrendously expensive. And C, it begs the question, where are Apple getting their information from? And again, even if they were filtering it, it would have to come off the internet somewhere. And to give you current information on macular degeneration, as you had requested, it would have to be data scraping from the internet on a continuous basis. And who is to say that Apple's method of scraping would be any more accurate or less biased than anybody else's? I can't see how you can possibly say that. So please, please, please explain to poor little Julian, what do you mean by on-device AI? I do not understand, and I cannot be the only one. So please explain. That's about it. Apart from an afterthought, Stephen, where is the Pixel 8 review that you've been promising since last year? I understand the policy. You know full well that Google will sooner or later be announcing Pixel 9, at which stage you'll be able to say, oh, well, too late to review this. I'll just bung it in this cupboard, which rather lets us all down, frankly. So a little suggestion. Why don't you just give it to Sean? Sean loves freebies and he loves new toys to play with. He'll do the review for you. Simple as. Go on. You know it makes sense.
It's not a bad idea.
So that's all I've got to say for now. Goodbye, chaps. Bye.
Thank you, Julian. It's always good to hear from Julian. Always good.
Throwing me under the bus. That's unbelievable.
Brilliant idea. Well, I'm going to be away. You've got nothing to do in May. What? So you could
neither
do a
you.
Full review. Excuse me. I'm off grid.
Get it in the post.
Actually, hang on.
I love
if I take an Android phone, will I be off grid? Is that the same thing?
Oh, I'm not touching that. Leave that alone. So, on-device AI. What does it mean, Stephen Scott?
Sean, it's an interesting one. So,
I can't actually answer that.
Yeah,
so, the example you gave was brilliant there, Julian, about asking AI to create a folder or shortcut of navigation apps and create a folder on your phone, let's say. Great example. Now, as we know, AI is trained on something, data sets, it's called. So lots and lots of, you know, examples of data, be it vocal, be it video, be it just internet articles, whatever it may be. That's how AI works. It's trained on a huge amount of previous data, a data set. Now, that lives somewhere and it's trained on that. And when I'm talking about on-device AI, and there are a couple of different versions of this, but what we're talking about here is, let's talk about on your iPhone, for example, all that data on there that makes it yours, maybe your emails, your messages, or your apps, or your data inside your apps, that can be used as the data set. So that is all brought together, all referenced, all accessible by the AI. Now, that data set, you don't want that sent anywhere for processing. I don't want my messages or my personal data that's on my phone sent to another company somewhere for processing, for training an AI, and then sent back to me with the answer that I want. I want that to stay on my device. That's my own personal data set. And I want that never to leave my device. Now, as we've talked about before with the AI we've seen so far, such as Be My AI and Access AI from Aira, Envision, whatever it may be, these AI services where you're asking it to describe an image, for example, we need to send that image off, it's processed, and we get the description back. Now, if it's on device, then that never leaves our device. And I think, obviously, Apple are going to go that way because they are so driven by privacy and security, so your personal data will never leave your device. Now, when you're talking about general questions, of course it will go off and scrape the internet for whatever it needs, but that's a general data set. We're talking about on device, my personal data. Don't send that anywhere. Process it on device.
Yeah,
that's how I take it.
That is a brilliant way of taking it. I think that makes a lot more sense to the way I was thinking about it, because I guess I was also thinking about speed of delivery as well. So, you know, with the processing happening on board, you know, the voice, the ability to come up with a response is happening on device as well. So, yes, in the case of going off to get the answer, you might get a bit of a delay, but the processing time would be quicker if the device has got the built-in capability to sort of almost, you know, have the ingredients to build up the answer and get
that
answer to you.
Absolutely correct. That's why I said there's a couple of different aspects when I say on-device processing, because, you know, we have that already in our Amazon smart speakers where you can ask it the time and it can process your voice command, voice recognition on device and give you an answer without sending it off to Amazon.
Yeah, it's almost like the voice. It's like the way to think about it, I suppose, is it's like asking someone in the room the time versus asking someone 100 miles away the time. In the
over
sense
the phone.
Of, exactly. Yes. You know, there's a delay in that, whereas the person is sitting, and they will still have to look at their watch, but the time will be lesser to get the answer to you. That's my reading of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're both true. They are absolutely both true.
But when we're talking... But the data set thing you talk about, that's really interesting, because this is bringing up a really interesting discussion. I've seen a few people talk about this, where they're saying, look, when Apple comes up with this new version of Siri, it is going to be focused on the data that you already have, your data, like you say, your messages, your emails, all that stuff. So the question might become, do we want a really fast, really responsive, really powerful Siri, but it's limited because of the capabilities or at least privacy issues that Apple has with that going out to the cloud to get the answer? You know, you may find that there's going to be a compromise here, a new compromise to consider with Siri. The onboard processing will mean that it'll be focused on all that data that's yours, but that will be within that walled garden. We're back to the walled garden thing again. You know, whereas the OpenAI is open to everything. Gemini is open to everything. This may be, I think, a bit of a distinction between what Apple offer and what others offer. And I think it'll create a new debate around what we want it to do.
No, absolutely. And everything we see so far is all, nothing really taking our data into consideration. It's all, I can generate a video doing this, or, you know, a new song doing that, or I can scrape to get your answers. The magic of AI is always the way it understands the context of the question you're asking and the way it delivers the information back to you. But the actual information it's searching through and where it puts that data is very important. And I think that's the distinction. We're going to start to see that as there's more CPUs that are geared and focused on AI and how to process that on device. We're going to see a lot more integration with how we use our devices, and it's going to grow and grow.
Yeah, we saw that with the human AI pin. It was the first time I saw something that I felt really useful. It was an example given where, you know, you could say, you know, where did I say I was meeting Tom for lunch on Tuesday? And it would go into your messages and it would just come back with a natural language response to that, which is, oh, you're meeting them on this Tuesday at 7 o'clock at this restaurant or whatever it was. And that seemed to me really useful. And I had an example yesterday. Someone asked me, you know, do you happen to have this particular image from this time? And the only way I could find it was by date, but it was quite awkward to find. If I was able to just ask AI, you know, where's the image that contains, and I knew what it contained, so I could just say, contains this, and it could just come back and surface that image or that text or that information. I mean, passwords or email addresses. Those are things that, you know, on odd occasions, because we share a lot of different resources amongst our group here, you know, there's lots of things been passed around. Sometimes someone will send you something and you'll say, God, where is that thing? Where is that number? Or where is that email address I need for this particular person? Just being able to ask AI to do that could be really powerful. That, I think, is where Apple are going to shine, actually, because this is where they can do this. And it's going to be fast, and it's going to be private, and it's all the things we want. But what I'm interested to see is how they are going to tackle the outside world problem. That's where things will get interesting. But yeah, yeah, very, very cool stuff. Julian, thank you for that question. I think it's a great question to ask because, you know, sometimes we talk about these things and maybe we're not clear all the time. So yeah, do
no, that's a failure on us. Yeah,
no, but look, it's good. No, I'm glad. I'm really glad you brought this up because if you know, this question may be something someone else has been wondering and just been a bit nervous to ask. You know, they don't, because not everybody fully understands this. I don't fully understand all this stuff yet.
No, of course not.
It's possibly why we're being really ham-fisted with our approach to answering some of these questions, because we're still a bit like, don't know, thing.
Yes, and it changes so quickly as well. So,
yes. Listen, as always, thanks for your comments. Keep them coming. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. You can reach us via voicemail, 1-877-803-4567. Keep your calls coming. Loads of you use that line, which is just fantastic. We did ask the question. We are asking the question about WhatsApp, so hopefully we'll get an answer to you soon on that one. Maybe when we get back at the end of May, we can have a think about adding WhatsApp as a way of communication as well, because that would be cool. And especially as we move to a video world with our YouTube channel, then yeah, that'd be kind of cool. It'd be nice to get your video messages as well. That's it for today. Yeah, Sean's in charge of editing. Upside down people everywhere. That's what we're going to be. It's going to be great.
Audio only for me, sorry.
Just remember, check out our website for all the very latest of what's happening and our YouTube content as well. You can check out the latest podcasts, the reviews and our stories all on doubletaponair.com. Like I say, we have got lots to talk about and you can find out some of that on there. Lots more to come tomorrow as the conversation continues. Sean, as always, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Ramya Amuthan. Join me weekly for AMI Audiobook Review, the podcast that explores new titles, introduces us to famous narrators, and updates what's hot at the Center for Equitable Library Access. Download episodes of AMI Audiobook Review from your favorite podcast provider.